Robert Thurston is in the studio with me tonight. He's a professor emeritus of history at Miami University and is senior editor of Coffee, a comprehensive guide to the bean, the beverage, and the industry. He's also a managing partner of the Oxford Coffee Company, a roaster and coffee bar in Oxford, Ohio. Tonight, we're going to talk about his latest book. It is titled Coffee, From Bean to Barista. Good to be with you. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Well, thank you very much. Great to be here.
So let's start by honoring your career as a professor of history and reading from Coffee about where this all began, as much as we know.
Yes. It started as an understory tree in the highlands of Ethiopia and still grows wild there. So this section that I'll read is about how people came to use coffee itself. Where did coffee come from originally? Legends abound about how coffee beans came first to be eaten, then made into a drink. Maybe once upon a time there was a real person, Kaldi the goatherd, guarding a flock in Ethiopia, who noticed that his charges were extra frisky one day. He followed them and found that they were eating coffee cherries. More probably, that's just a cute story. Did Ethiopian warriors chew on coffee beans so they could march and fight longer while staying more alert? Such images are impossible to pin down. So we have all these nice legends about coffee, but we really don't know much about it until the first coffee houses opened, which was between 1500 and 1550 in what's today Syria, Aleppo, Damascus, then later Cairo and Istanbul.
And then could you just trace its migration around the world,
okay,
where it went from there?
Yeah. Well, again, the coffee trees are originally from Ethiopia. And then coffee jumped across the Red Sea, not very far, to Yemen. So it was cultivated there. And Arab merchants sold it to Italians and Englishmen and so on. And so the beverage spread that way. And then the beans themselves spread first to India. They were smuggled out as live, viable. We're talking about the seeds of a fruit, of course. So viable seeds were taken to India in the 17th century. And then there's not just a legend, but the French had one tree that they had gotten somehow, and they gave a tree to the Dutch, who put it in a nice glass conservatory. And then from there, the Dutch, who had conquered the East Indies, what's today Indonesia, from the Portuguese, the Dutch then took viable coffee beans, seeds, planted them in Indonesia. So today, Indonesia is a very large producer. And from there, by the very early 1700s, the Dutch began to export coffee around the world. Meanwhile, a Frenchman took coffee in about 1732 across the Caribbean to islands like Jamaica, Haiti. And from there, it migrated step by step down through Central and then South America. And it finally made its way all the way back around the world to Kenya, just south of Ethiopia, by the late 1800s. It got to Hawaii along the way in the 1820s. So it finally actually circled the globe and got back next to its original homeland, but not until the late 1800s.
And at some point, there's a detour and there's a coffee house in Boston, right? In the early, was that 1700s?
Well, late 1600s already. One in Boston seems to be the first one in what were the British colonies then, and one in New York. And the first coffee that came to those coffee houses was brought by the Dutch. So it made that migration too.
One of the things that was so enlightening to me in your book was the many steps there are in getting coffee to a cup in our house.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And the first part of that is that it takes just several years for a seedling, a coffee seedling, to come to maturity and bear fruit. So then what's the next step after that, Robert?
Well, that fruit has to be harvested, of course. It has to be picked off the trees, either by hand or mechanically.
And what's it called at that point?
Coffee cherry. We often use the singular, but that's because the fruit of the coffee tree, when it ripens, is about the size and often the color of a cherry. So that's why. So then that coffee, at some point, there are different ways and stages of doing this, but that coffee has to be pulped. That is, the seeds have to be squeezed out of the fruit. And then there are different ways of doing this, but coffee then can still have a layer of what's called mucilage around the seeds. And that has to dry and also ferment. over maybe a 24-hour period. Again, it's only one way of doing it. And then the mucilage is cleaned off by water, by rubbing the beans against each other, for example. Then the beans have to dry further. Then they're taken down to what's called a dry mill. They have still a couple of layers of protection around the seed. And then they have to be hulled or milled to get that layer off, which is called parchment. They may be stored in parchment layer for a long time, and then hulled, and then they're ready to be exported. And then they come to people like me who roast them. Roasting is kind of an art and a science. You know, there's all sorts of course, physical and chemical processes that go on while you are roasting the beans, especially that the natural sugars in the coffee will change shape and composition. They caramelize, they become nice and gooey. We can't really see this. And then if you have good quality beans to begin with, you want to roast them to the desired degree of darkness. It's very easy to ruin coffee beans while you're roasting them, but you cannot ever improve on the inherent qualities of the bean. So with some beans, you have to be extremely careful in the very last, even minute, sometimes even 10 seconds of a roast to dump the coffee and start to cool it before it gets to be too dark. And for what it's worth, I really prefer light roasts of coffee because with those roasts, you really bring out the inherent flavors, the flavor notes of coffee, whether it's stone fruit or citrus or chocolate or caramel or whatever, sometimes a combination of those. Whereas the darker you go with a roast, the more you taste the roast and not the inherent qualities of the beans. But whatever your taste is, that's just fine.
I think what's important to acknowledge is that this obviously is a very hands-on process.
Oh,
and
yes.
You estimate that tens of millions of slaves and indigenous people were the ones who made coffee flourish because of all these steps, all the engagement. You say that 100 pounds of coffee cherry yields about 12 to 15 pounds of coffee.
Right.
So it really is amazing that some of us, at any rate, take it so for granted.
Yeah.
There are two main kinds of coffee. You want to tell us what those are and also your definition of what's a specialty coffee and what's a commodity coffee?
Okay. All right. Well, the two main species of coffee, which are fairly closely related, are Coffea arabica. So it should be Coffea africana because the trees are from Africa. But since Europeans bought coffee from Arab merchants first, they called it Coffea arabica. So that's the good species, more or less. And the rougher stuff is called Coffea conifera, or popularly Robusta. And that goes into more inexpensive blends and instant coffee, and it's much more durable. It'll withstand frost and drought much better than Arabica trees. And Robusta has about twice, on average, the level of caffeine that Arabica beans do. So again, it's cheaper stuff, but much hardier. So the definition of specialty coffee as opposed to commodity coffee, it's kind of a tough one. The way I put it is anything that comes in more than a plastic tub in the grocery store is going to be specialty coffee. What it means more than that is that someone has taken a good deal of care with that coffee from the ground up, care in cultivating it, harvesting it, processing it, then roasting it and making it into coffee drinks. But it's a flexible category so that Starbucks, for example, is considered specialty coffee, even though it's mass market coffee. Commodity coffee refers to stuff about which you don't know where it came from, and it's just kind of dumped together, and it may have a lot of Robusta in it. And so there isn't much that's special about it, put it that way.
In my recollection, espresso came into my world probably in the 60s, and you had to go to a Greek restaurant down the steps to experience it. We now have all kinds of espresso and fancy names for coffee drinks. But one of the things that's fascinating in your book is there is a photo of an early espresso machine. And as you described to me, it was probably well over 6 feet tall.
Yes.
And so read about that, if you will, please.
Sure.
There's a caption with the photo.
The pre-World War I Italian espresso machine worked by gravity. Hot water was fed to the top chamber on each side and then allowed to pass down through ground coffee. The term espresso at first meant only quick service. The word was intended to be linked to express trains in Italy, and coffee made from early machines of this type was first sold at railway stations. Only with the invention of a machine by Gaggia in 1947 that forced water through the ground coffee did modern espresso arrive. At first, the Italians called it cream coffee in both their language and in English, a reference to the light brown layer on top of the drink. We have now swung back to the Italian word for cream to call that layer crema.
There is so much fascinating information in this book, Robert. I want to thank you for being with us tonight. Who knew that Mussolini and his comrades invented the term barista, and Bach wrote a cantata coffee.
It's great music.
Yeah. You can sip a cup while you're listening
Absolutely.
To it, I assume.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much. Thanks for your book. Thanks for talking with us tonight.
Thank you very much, Barbara.
I've been talking with Robert Thurston tonight about his latest book. It is titled Coffee, From Bean to Barista, about which you'll find more information at wvxu.org/aroundcincinnati. I'm Barbara Gray.
I'm feeling mighty lonesome, haven't slept a wink. I walk the floor and watch the door, and in between I drink black coffee. Love's a hand-me-down brew.